Here I am.
We have a couple of informational items that we're going to discuss today.
Hi, Scott Taylor, and I'm director of the Emergency Center Leadership Program. I have to have one sheet that will summarize, in particular, our leadership program. This goes hand in hand with what Dr. Burns is referring to in terms of collaboration. It's a pleasure to be here. We are very excited about the student interest in leadership. And back in 2005 to 2006, in our dynamic leadership program, we had 230 students that were participating in that program. In the strategic plan at that time, and participation in the Dynamic Leadership Institute was included in the plan with the goal by 2010 to raise our number to 830. So that was our five-year goal. This past year, 2007-8, 2 years ahead of time, we had 949 students. That represents a 330% increase in 2 years. So I think that illustrates the interest that our students have in terms of leadership and being on the cutting edge and getting that, a head start in terms of maybe a little advantage in their competitors when they reach the job market. So we have changed our goal for 2010, and now we are looking at 1,100. So hopefully in the next 2 years we'll have a significant increase. Let me explain very quickly what our program is. We have four phases. The first phase deals primarily with leadership and leadership basic skills. But we talk about problem solving, using diversity in your leadership, identifying your leadership style, developing teamwork, all the things that were just mentioned in terms of the Kettering Foundation. When we go to phase two, all that is self-awareness. In that phase, we use similar instruments that are used in business and industry in their management, development, and supervision development. Phase three, we just added this phase a year and a half ago. We're using case studies. And we have student groups analyze the case studies. Then we bring in business leaders. And the students tell the business leaders how they would go about resolving the case. And then the business leaders tell our students how they would go about resolving the situation. So we have a great interaction there. We're also using that phase two assessment instruments, the StrengthQuest and Leadership Challenge, which is a 360-degree feedback mechanism. I mentioned that because in the cohort program, I had lunch with one of the new students in the cohort program. She was very excited about what was going on in the doctoral program. And two of the things that they are doing is a StrengthQuest, a StrengthFinder. They're using a StrengthFinder, and they're using a 360-degree feedback. So our program is using the same type of curriculum that we are seeing in management and within our doctoral program as well. And our fourth phase, basically that is a partnership that we have with the Alumni Office, the Career Services Center, the Chamber of Commerce, and we're helping students transition from being student leaders to being leaders in their community, remunerated for professionalism. So that's a summary of our four phases. Just wanted to provide you that information. You might wonder how we had the 330% increase. Well, it is through collaborations. Our program has gone to a campus-based program. Now we are in Lasco. This past year we went to Owensboro. We're at the community college. The Owensboro campus really embraced us this past year under Neil Bradley's leadership. The Honors College, Dr. Cobain has been very supportive of our program. And the rest of the tall Brian Cooper's here, but Brian and Lynn Holland and Peggy Crow, I'm sorry, she just has a new name, they all have supported this program. So when we talk about collaborations, and I do think collaboration very often is overused, but this is truly a campus-wide WKU community collaboration. And that is how this program has grown to where it is. It was mentioned that we feel like that Western is ahead of the other schools in terms of leadership. And I think when you look at our leadership certificate program and the doctoral program, all the many things that are going on across campus, we can pretty much justify that statement that we are leading the pack. So we're very pleased with that. I want to talk just a 1 minute about the content of our program. I 2 years ago had an opportunity to work in a year-long training program at TJ Sampson. In a couple of weeks, I'll be doing some work at Logan Aluminum and Warren County Industrial Consortium. The content of our program, I promise you, is the exact same content that the businesses and the industries are asking consultants and training people to come in and help develop their supervisors and their managers. We're using the same instruments. So we have, we feel like that we have a very good product for our students to use for their development. I want to recognize Julia Wire. We have, and on the staff and our leadership and volunteerism staff, we have 2 full-time people. Julia, if you'd stand, please. Julia's been with us for 2 years. It is by no accident that in that 2 years, if you look at our growth, it has happened in the 2 year period. And so I just wanted to publicly express Julia and the effort that she's done. Our other ringleader, so to speak, was Amanda Phillips, and Amanda has taken a job similar to what she had here in Carbondale, Southern Illinois, because her husband is there getting his PhD, so they couldn't commute that far. It was a little distance for them. So we are looking to find a replacement for Amanda, and we're expecting great things this time of year. I wanted to, on the back of the sheet that I handed you, When we talk about engagement and volunteerism and service learning, I've listed several things that are true about engagement. In particular, the Up Till Dawn and the Relay for Life efforts. We talk about the Western spirit. And that's evident for athletic events and the red towel and the classrooms, but the Western spirit also is a philanthropic. And our students are so engaged in community involvement. It is unbelievable. It's hard to track. It's very hard to track that sort of engagement. But these are examples. The Up to Dawn program for the St. Jude's Hospital. Over 1,000 students participate in that program alone year-round. Our Relay for Life. Over 1,000 students participate in the Relay for Life effort. So I want you to know that the WKU student is very civically involved. And I think this is evidence to that. One other thing, shut up and sit down, is on the weekends, our students, and God can attest to this, every weekend except for Parents Weekend, Homecoming Weekend, and Finals Weekend, our students are out and about going to leadership retreats, developing and that way, being exposed to other opportunities. We have every weekend some group of students that is that they are out there working for the community and doing things. So be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
I just have a brief comment. The DLI program at Western Tech University is something that a lot of universities don't have, and I was honored to go through the first 3 phases and put in some input to have a 4th phase, which was implemented, I think, full-time last spring. And they've just grown in leaps and bounds. I was part of the first 230 there in 2005, and it is a wonderful program, and I want to thank Scott and Julia and Amanda for their work, because they have impacted a lot of students who would otherwise have sat in their dormitory room and not done anything else. So they have really done a wonderful job, and I was honored and blessed to do that program, and I think that this board, and I'm glad it was part of our strategic plan, because it's evident that it is helping the Western community. So,
in a 100-day period, we are presenting 460 training sessions. And Jonathan has helped us with some of it. We've utilized about 80 volunteers, 60 to 80 volunteers.
This is a very important program. You heard Dr. Bursch describe our the progress we're making both on campus and among peers in the whole matter of engagement and how important that is in our strategic plan with our faculty and with our students. Well, it's one thing to have those goals and engage, involve faculty and have faculty begin to embrace the importance of a civic responsibility and their own involvement in communities within our reach. But in the absence of student priority on the minds of students, it's of inconsequential value, because that's how that whole concept spreads. And when students graduate from WKU, we want them to have a sense of confidence and understand what their responsibilities are in whatever community they happen to find themselves in once they leave us after an undergraduate or graduate degree. So the correlation with this program and with what our faculty and our students are doing in the broader spectrum of engagement and civic responsibility, they're directly correlated, and one feeds off the other, and in fact neither can be particularly successful in the absence of the other. So this is really important. Then you combine this with our certification program in leadership that's more of an academic enterprise, but correlated and the complementary of this. There are just a number of things unfolding, and as a result, our students create things and take initiatives and get the confidence to do things like last year, the One Campaign to address global poverty. And just so many initiatives are unfolding. And now the students are coming up with ideas, concepts, and, we can do this. They read about something, they hear about something, or they create something, and they just go for it. And that's the kinds of those are the kinds of things that allow communities to grow and prosper and just build energy and a community self-esteem. But that doesn't happen without people who have the confidence and some experience and know-how. So that's that may not be as important as the academic element in the WKU experience, but it is an important part of what can make this university, if not unique, certainly raise our level of capacity to achieve that leading American university vision that we have. So I really compliment our student affairs staff and academic affairs in terms of the leadership certification program, both really important. So great work.
Now we'll have a report on our fall occupancy and the resident hall renovations.
This kind of goes hand in hand to some of the things that we spoke about yesterday.
By the way, yesterday at our retreat, when we were having our discussion of a bond and bond capacity and reviewing our bond profile, and Jim, you brought up the matter of the Student Life Foundation, and I did about a 30-second summary of a very complex 6 or 7 year initiative, and probably didn't do that much justice in trying to describe it on the fly there. But Brian Kuster has been the man behind our Student Life Foundation. He's the executive director of the Student Life Foundation. The confidence that board has is vested in him. I failed to acknowledge that yesterday, Brian, when you were up at the faculty house when we had that conversation. But publicly, as a matter of record, at a Board of Regents meeting, I do want to compliment you and certainly your team in Residence Life, but you've been the consistent thread throughout the Student Life Foundation from day one, and I've watched you grow and understand and embrace very complex financial transactions and do so with confidence the very distinguished service and making a unique model in public higher education work. and really be an important part of our progress as a university. So great work, and I want to publicly thank you for your work with the Student Life Foundation.
Well, thank you very much. As you all know, we can't do that without great people behind the scenes, and board members and tremendous board, and then tremendous people that we have an opportunity to work with. And I'll talk to them about that when we get to the construction part of it.
I wanted to share with you this morning just our occupancy report today. Again, as you'll look at the first page, this goes hand in hand with what Dr. Taylor talked about yesterday, with what they're seeing in admissions. Our first year student numbers are up to 28 as of the 15th of this month. You'll see that the returning numbers appear to be flat, but if you look at the second page, that kind of gives you a historical perspective of year-to-date on the occupancy. Our number of returning students actually is up by 100. If you look at what our occupancy was 2 years ago and compare it to what we're looking at today as far as returning students, that number really is about 100 students more returning to the residence hall than what we had in a couple previous years. And I think one of those things, that just a simple policy change that we did this past year that takes effect in the fall, and I believe I may have talked about this with the board previously. Previously, we had freshman-only halls where only first-year students lived in certain buildings, and then their sophomore year, they had to move to other buildings. And what we found was we really lost a sense of community with those students. What we gained with having freshman-only halls is we really could focus just on meeting those first-year students. But we think we found some ways with our learning communities and other programmatic things to still continue to meet the needs of those first-year students. At the same time, allow students to stay in the same building with the same group of people and develop that sense of community. And I think that's where that 100 person swing came along. Right now, we're about 95% occupancy, and if trends hold true, we'll gain more first-year students between now and August, but unfortunately, we'll lose upper class students that will decide to live off campus or do something different. We work very hard to contact students to ask them to confirm that they are returning. If for some reason we see that someone dropped classes, and yet we have not been notified or have not enrolled for classes yet that have renewed their housing, then we contact them. And then with our first-year students, as we have upper class students that leave, then we have we make room changes in for the students that want to be in different buildings, and then that kind of trickles down then to where we can assign our first-year students. As you'll see on page one, we still have a number of first-year students that we have not communicated to them what their assignment is, but we do communicate that they will get them. We do have room. We will assign them, but we can't do that today. We try not to use the term waiting list because that implies that maybe they won't be in. But we know that we will be able to house all of our first-year students, and that's really our priority, is to make sure that our first-year students are living on campus. We know that there's definitely an educational benefit, both with involvement and satisfaction of our students that live on campus as opposed to commute. Any questions about occupancy or such?
What level, Brian, must you achieve in order to ensure financial solvency or meeting debt obligations with the Student Life Foundation? What level of occupancy is your threshold to achieve?
It's 2691 is what we actually budget for each year. And so, just by coincidence, that was what our number was last year, our settlement number. But we also had more students that returned for the spring semester than we had in the previous year. So we actually came out a little better.
That would be new applicants, and yes. And total beds with total beds available 49, 47, you need to run about 90-something percent to occupancy to 94% to ensure that, that you're meeting your debt obligation.
Right. And then anything above that then will allow us to take on additional debt, or we'll use that surplus funds for different projects that we'll talk about. And that number actually, with the bond issue we did back in March of $26 million, we had about 100 more students over the last 5 years that have been on campus, and so that's how we came up with the capacity to take on additional debt back in March. And I think that's one of the things that I've been most proud of or pleased is when we came up with this concept in 1999, you know, we really didn't know financially how was it going to work, and I think it has exceeded my expectations of how, you know, I think financially we've been able to do things. Because initially, our what I'll call phase two, what we're currently doing now, we didn't think we'd get to start doing that in the top until about 2010-2011, and we were able to move that up, and actually we've been able, at the end of this cycle of renovations we're currently doing, we would have renovated every building greater than what we have on campus, with the exception of Zach Price and Meredith that were built in 1992. But we have done significant work to that building, replacing carpeting. This next summer we're going in replacing ceiling tile and all new lighting, again, to be more energy efficient in those buildings. And the other thing that I would tell you is if you walk through the halls today, the maintenance and the maintaining these buildings is 100% better than what it was prior to 1999. Not only do we have a great maintenance staff, but we have the funds to be able to do those things, and we do not have a lot of deferred maintenance in the rooms hall today. And so as I talk to colleagues across the country, you know, I feel like we have the best of both worlds. You know, we have a lot of flexibility, but at the same time, we're part of the university. We're not a lot of state schools now are looking at working with private developers to create additional beds. And we're very fortunate that you know, we can save that money.
Well, the difference is we capture the profit factor. When you work with a private developer in a in an off-campus housing initiative, they make money. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is plowing that profit variable back into what benefits our students, and that's the beauty of the student life. And you are the profit factor, and every bit of that goes back into further improvements and adding to the quality of life for our students, not some private enterprise that makes money off of our housing portfolio. Again, I reiterate the significance of keeping both the debt and the financial profile off of the university books and off of this table for our governing board, which allows us to then focus the university's capacity on the academic priorities and other factors and auxiliary services that again serve our students. So this it's really been a it's great to see a concept come together the way this has.
Well, and most state schools are just now starting to look at how they're going to renovate you know, their inventory. You know, CP had a meeting beginning of the month to talk with schools about their plans, and here we are on the back end of it, and we'll start looking at, you know, what do we do in the future. So, again, I think that those students, when they're here, they may not realize the difference between our residence halls and on-campus living as maybe another school would say. I think if they go visit, they definitely see that.
So what are you doing now?
Okay, let's move on. But again, something that I've talked a bit more about previously is a lot of the work we're doing at Career Forward. One of the things that we are really working hard to change is the perception. You know, the perception of Career Forward has not always been positive, and it's not because people have actually been to the building. It's a lot of different reasons that we've discussed previously. So we are investing quite a bit of money in re-landscaping that area. That'll go hand in hand with the new food service building that we're building in that courtyard area between Poland, Pierce Ford, and King. And what we're trying to do is mimic the work that's been done in the Cal Plaza and then in the Centennial Plaza to bring students out of the building and to give them areas to sit and talk and to interact. And so we're doing that at Chris Ford and Poland Hall. Some of that work was using our yearly operational money, some of using surplus funds that we generate from year to year. A couple minor things. Again, a contractor may not seem like a big issue, but the cost savings that we have with all the materials that students generate and compacting it and taking it to the landfill as opposed to the old trash chutes that we had at one time. So this will be the last compactor. Again, just a minor roof replacement from the storm. One of the projects that a lot of that we've been working with parking and transportation with is increased the bicycle racks on campus with the cost of fuel. We definitely feel that students will be looking at all kinds of alternative modes of transportation, and we want to make sure that we keep students from locking their bicycles up to light poles or trees or those kind of things. I know yesterday John talked about the food service building, and I think you shared some pictures with that. I think that's going to be a beautiful facility and serve the 2,500 students we have on the south of the campus. We're looking forward to beginning that. I shared with you a rendering of Keene Hall. If you have driven down the Avenue Champion, you've seen our new building. It looks new from the outside, and we're making it look new on the inside. I've had more comments from people in the community that have seen the work we've done on the outside of the building. And as we know, the first perceptions are seen a lot, so we're real proud with that. We are renovating all the bedrooms and the bathrooms in that building. This summer, we focused our attention on the north tower, which is the seventh floor, what we call the tall side of the building. Next summer, then, we'll focus on the south tower, the short side. I'm up here in the valley, McCormick, Gilbert, and Rose. We've already renovated all the bedrooms and common areas in those buildings through previous work. So this summer, we're focusing on mechanical, the fan coil units, electrical, lighted ceilings in those buildings. And then next summer, we're putting in new furniture, new flooring, new finishes in the bedrooms. Again, because of our occupancy, the only time we really can do work is between May 15th and about August the 4th or 5th. And so it amazes me. We have a great team that both from our contractors to our project managers to get all this work done from start to finish and be ready to go and clean and the students come in, maximum students come in on the 17th of August. Again, we have a great group of contractors, a lot of those have worked with us with multiple projects. They know what our expectations are, and they know, that the project can't go over the time limit. And then lastly, Pierce Ford, I hope that at some point we can take you a tour of Pierce Ford. We're renovating the 27th floor. I know that the same time that this board has met on that 27th floor, that area is designed for both study space and recreational space for the students in that building. It's the observation floor, great views. And then we're doing the top third of the building. That's where learning communities will be housed. The learning communities will have a multi-purpose room on the floor with flat screen TVs, again, for studying and some interaction space for the students. All new furniture, pictures, electrical in those bedrooms, along with renovating bathrooms. And in our bathroom renovations, we do a lot to try to create privacy for those students so that each student has a separate shower stall. There's a changing area. So, again, it's about privacy for the students. So those are kind of our updates of what we have going on this summer, and we'll be ready to open for our students on Sunday the 17th.
Great.
Thank you. We're going to take a recess for a moment here, or two or three moments, and reconvene the next 10 minutes, 15 minutes.